Okay, good morning. We're here with Lauren Isaacs of Heyroot, Canada.
Thank you for having me.
Based in Toronto, I seem to understand, but mostly based in Jerusalem now, right?
Yes, thank God. Splitting the time between Israel and Canada now.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. So we're going to talk about anti-Semitism on college campuses. Is that our goal today?
Yes, a very important topic.
Yeah, I think it's something that we both know and care a lot about, and we have a lot to discuss here. But for the sake of those who haven't heard the story before, why don't you explain how you got into this?
My story? Well, I'll give you a quick version. I was never actually really much affiliated with Israel or Zionist activity or Judaism, really. Pretty secular growing up my whole life. But when I was in high school, I actually had an accident, a pretty severe accident that rendered me quite disabled for about 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And then I really got closer to Hashem and God and Israel, and I realized that there was something bigger than myself, and there was a reason, you know, to be in this world, and I wanted to do something productive. So now, thank God, I'm spending my life hopefully doing good things, making a lasting impact for Israel and the Jewish people, and I'm very happy, thank God.
Coming from a place of adversity into this may have helped steel you for the adversity you face when you promote Zionism in Israel on a campus.
Right. And there's a lot of that. There is a lot of hostility on the campuses. It is a real battleground. I never expected it to be so virulent, the hatred towards Jews and Israel, but it really is. The anti-Semitism is alive and well.
And you get it, and also email, social media, it's all over.
All over, yeah, absolutely. You can't escape it. And that's why it's incumbent on us to be the ones who stand up for Israel, to be the ones who say, hey, this is not right, or that's a lie. We have to educate the correct way. We have to make Jews care about Israel, or else the next generation is lost.
It's very true. And people, it's very easy to believe the lies. It's very easy to engage in groupthink. You have to actually engage your brain to see, you know, how incredibly false the nonsense is that they are saying.
Exactly.
I'm struck by this, you know, the idea, the transparent falsehood that this is somehow unrelated to anti-Semitism or different from anti-Semitism. It's another of the lies that they tell. I mean, I tell people, this is not the new anti-Semitism. That's ridiculous. If it says without substantiation that the Jews are engaged in theft from others, and that's because the Jews feel that they are superior to others, that's not new anti-Semitism. That's 3,300-year-old anti-Semitism.
Exactly.
And the idea, you know, this facade, we really shouldn't be calling it anti-Semitism either. I mean, as Arabs like to point out, they are Semites even more than we are. So this nonsense came out of Germany, the transformation of Jew hatred into anti-Semitism. We don't hate them because of their religion, because in the Enlightenment you're not allowed to do that anymore. Now we hate their ethnicity. Today we don't hate their ethnicity, we hate their country. It's the same hatred. It's nothing. There's nothing different about it.
Of course, of course. Anti-Semitism has always just been hating the Jews and accusing them for the greatest crime of that generation. And when it was, you know, when racial theory was very important, Jews were seen as an inferior race. And when economic, you know, when socialism was on top, Jews were seen as capitalists. And when capitalism was on top, Jews were seen as socialists. And when nationhood was important, Jews were seen as a wandering, nationless, dual loyalty people. And now when colonialism is seen as the worst thing and actually having loyalty to a nation, Jews are seen as colonizers. So it's the same anti-Semitism, as you say.
It just goes from one to the other to the next. What do you think is perhaps the most surprising aspect amongst Jews on campus? You know, what are you encountering that really surprises you?
Surprising and disappointing is, I would say, the Jewish ignorance towards Israel and its history, and the lack of Jewish connection to Jewish identity and therefore Israel. We are seeing so many disconnected students and young Jews nowadays. It's not only that they're disconnected to Israel. They don't care about it. They don't know about it. They don't know the history. They believe the lies. They even speak out against Israel. But they're not connected to their own Judaism at all. They wouldn't know, you know, to fast on Yom Kippur. They wouldn't know what day Yom Kippur was. Just these things, it's shocking and it's sad.
Well, these people are going to be completely lost to the Jewish people as a result of that. The funny thing is that, you know, they're engaged in kicking the door on the way out, as it were. You know, you look at a group like Bend the Ark or If Not Now, and
right.
These are all, you know, they're proudly proclaiming how Jewish they are. Meanwhile, you know, in between their ears, there isn't a scintilla of Jewish thought.
Exactly. I can't stand, that is one of my pet peeves, when they use their Jewishness as the token of why they must be able to speak on how Israel is oppressing and how Jews are, you know, evil and these things. I'm Jewish, therefore I can say that Israel is an apartheid nation. And they say that, and it is disgusting, you know. It's tantamount to the what the capos were doing in Nazi Germany. There's so much education needed, especially in our own Jewish community.
It's startling that the two of them travel, you know, so well together, the ignorance of Judaism and the hostility towards Israel. But at the same time, this whole intersectionality nonsense, the ideas are so discordant, they have so little to do with each other, and yet they all form one nice little anti-Semitic package.
And what is concerning is that the Jews are willfully blinding themselves to the realities of intersectionality and how anti-Semitism plays an innate part in that intersectionality. Jews are always on the bottom. Jews are always the most hated. Jews are always the most attacked. And just because a Jew stands up with an organization like Black Lives Matter, it doesn't mean he's going to be spared from the anti-Semitism that is very much coming to get him afterwards.
Well, Avram was described as the Ivri. And Ivri, we know from terms like Aver HaNahar, the Ivri, he's on the other side. Whatever
right.
You are, the Jews are not. To a white supremacist, the Jews are enemy number one. But to a person of color, quote-unquote, to use the modern aphorism, the Jews have white privilege.
Right.
And, you know, this is insanity. This is, and it's open bigotry. You take a Jew who is a refugee from Iraq, who now lives in America, and that person, because he's part of the Jewish community, is regarded as having white privilege. Meanwhile, the oppressors, the people who were so bigoted as to ethnically cleanse the Jews from Iraq, if they come to America, they're regarded as people of color and therefore oppressed. They've never been oppressed. They've had plenty of experience with bigotry and always on the giving side.
Exactly. I mean, it's stunning how this manages to just be accepted in societies. The Jew is whatever the hatred wants it to be. That's what it is, and it's exactly the way it was in Nazi Germany. It's just people don't want to see it nowadays. And you can see that in the fact that who are Jews voting for? The vast majority of Jews in America voting for people and parties and institutions that are openly saying, we want to, you know, have negotiations and relationships with the PLO, the terrorist organizations who pay people to murder Israelis. We support that. And Jews are in favor of this. It's crazy.
I think that, you know, very sadly, it looks like we're going to have 4 years of, you know, giving funding back to the PLO, reopening the office for the PLO to do nothing except express its intransigence. One thing, perhaps the most remarkable foreign policy achievement of the last 4 years was to stop holding Israel hostage to the intransigence of the Palestinian Authority and the terror organizations that dominate in that region of the world.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is the idea that, you know, moving the embassy was supposed to result in a conflagration. You know, for all the people don't like Trump's character, if he didn't have that character, the embassy would not have moved. Because everybody was saying he was wrong, and he knew it was the right thing to do. And guess what? The result was precisely the opposite of what was predicted. On the same day that the Abraham Accords were announced, there was an article claiming that Mike Pompeo is the worst Secretary of State we've ever had. Excuse me, the worst Secretary, the most stupid and wrong Secretary of State we've ever had in the last couple of decades is the guy who told us that there absolutely can be no progress any between Israel and any other country in the Middle East until the Palestinian issue is resolved, and that was John Kerry.
Exactly.
And he said that until the Palestinians are satisfied, until Israel continues giving the Arabs what they want to reward terrorism and give them more and more and more, until that time there can be no peace with any other Arab state. We are looking all around us. That was completely false. That was categorically wrong. And it was actually evil.
Absolutely. And it was, again, it was shades of anti-Semitism underlying those statements. Why? Because it's the Jews that will have to capitulate and bow to international pressure in order for there to be peace, for anything to get done. It's always the Jews who are the troublemakers, the Jews who are the instigators, the Jews who are at the center of the controversy. This is all, it comes back to the same thing. Politics is just a larger version of what's going on individual university campuses.
Have you encountered, I mean, I know that there's going to be a town hall on the Black Jewish community and reconciliation, and I'm like, there isn't a problem between the Black community and the Jewish community. There's a problem between anti-Semites and the Jewish community. And
exactly.
Anti-Semitism comes in all colors and races. I think that the African-American community, you know, in particular, that they're being sold a narrative. This comparison of Israel to apartheid South Africa is beyond disgusting. And those who, you know, South Africans who actually are interested in knowing the truth, I mean, they come to Israel and they're absolutely stunned. I wouldn't be allowed to go in the same hospital during apartheid. I wouldn't be allowed to ride in the same part of the bus during apartheid. I certainly wouldn't be allowed to vote or serve in the government during apartheid. How on earth can you call this? There's Black Africans in all of these positions in Israel today, because, by the way, to this day and around the world, it has never happened in human history except once that a country imported Black Africans in order to make them free people.
Yes, exactly.
So for accusing Israel of racism, Israel has demonstrated that it is the least racist nation of any in the world, because there is no other country that has voluntarily brought in Africans simply to let them enjoy freedom.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm my whole family is South African, and they grew up in apartheid South Africa. So it is an egregious comparison, just talking about the freest place in the world as compared to a heinous time when, as you say, Blacks were treated as subhuman in South Africa. And, it's absolutely, it's categorically insane. I mean, again, it is pure, blatant anti-Jewishness, but the narrative is compelling. The narrative is compelling. People are manipulated with words and ideas and narratives that are not true, but it doesn't matter to them because it strikes an emotional chord, and suddenly they hear that, oh my God, there's apartheid in Israel, I must be against this, I must fight against this. It's clever. It manipulates them, and that's why we're often losing the PR war.
You know, but it's also because, again, that's that intersectionality nonsense coming back, because you have this, the narrative that's being told is so patently anti-Semitic and so patently counterfactual. You look, the reason why Islamic Arabs in particular have a problem, the Islamists, the radical Islam, has a problem with Israel, is exactly the same reason why the best real estate in all of Africa is colonized. You look at Northern Africa, that is the Mediterranean Sea, that is some of the best real estate in the world, and all of those countries, Morocco, Libya, Algeria, Egypt, and I'm missing one, but all of these countries across Northern Africa are all dominated by Arabs. And by the way, what do you think they did with the native Africans? They talk about, you know, Jews involved in the slave trade. Hello. How do you think that these places became so completely Arab dominated? What do you think they did with the survivors of the massacres that they conducted when they got there in the first place? So you've got that group, and then you've got the gay groups, the pro-homosexual groups, and they call it pinkwashing, that Israel is tolerant towards homosexuals. And obviously, you know, Israel to this day is the refuge for a gay Arab in the Middle East. They go to Haifa because there's nowhere else that they can live safely outside of Israel, where they won't be massacred for having homosexual inclinations. They'll be thrown off of buildings and dragged through the streets, and meanwhile the pro-gay activists would rather demonize Israel than deal with the real hostility towards homosexuals in that part of the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's absolute cognitive dissonance. And, you know, when people, as you say, it's willful ignorance. They're closing their eyes to the real atrocities happening around the world and right in the same vicinity, right next door, right in Gaza. The atrocities where they are beating women and gang raping people and lynching people and throwing gays off buildings, they're just ignoring it. And it doesn't matter to them because it doesn't have to do with the Jews. And, you know, in a world right now where being a colonizer is the worst sin you could be. Oh my God, you colonized someone else's land. Again, they're ignoring the fact that the Muslim Empire is potentially the greatest and most successful colonizing empire in the history of humanity. How much it has colonized the Middle East and the Arabian Peninsula, all over the world it has colonized. And no one cares. No one cares because it doesn't have to do with the Jews.
That's entirely correct. By the way, the country that I missed was Tunisia. It is
Tunisia.
It's the one that's geographically not huge. All the, and there they are again, exactly as you just described. It's all the result of Islamic Jihad under the banner of Muhammad, and that's exactly where this idea comes from. That once a land is colonized, once it has fallen under the domination of Islam, it's never supposed to be lost. So the fact that Israel, they could tolerate when Britain had control of that region, because again, like you said, it didn't have to have anything to do with the Jews. But once the Jews are in charge in Israel, their own homeland, we have to insist that they're colonizing it from a people called Palestinians. I mean, this idea, the name Palestine is not an indigenous name. It's kind of like Native Americans having called themselves Native American. It's ludicrous. It's a stupidity. Palestine is a word that an Arab speaking Arabic cannot even pronounce, which is
exactly
why they call it Palestine.
And it means invader. And
the word means invader from Plishtim in the original Hebrew. That's where the Romans got it from. It was Roman colonists who insisted on calling the land Palestine to disenfranchise the native Judeans. To this day, it is an entirely racist construct, which encompasses a Palestinian can be an Arab Muslim, an Arab Christian, can be a Druze, can be a Bedouin. The only thing that a Palestinian cannot be is a Jew, who were the majority of Jerusalem's population in the late 19th century when there was no such thing as Zionism. This has nothing to do with Zionism and everything to do with racism.
Exactly. And, you know, going back to what you said, yes, when the land is not in Jewish hands, when it has nothing to do with the Jews, no one cares. Because, again, this is all about anti-Semitism. And we know this pure basic fact, the PLO Charter. When the PLO Charter of 1964 came out, when they invented Palestinians and Palestinian nationhood, Yasser Arafat had a charter, right? And the charter explicitly claimed, Article 24 of that charter claims that the Palestinian people exercise no territorial sovereignty over Gaza or the West Bank. That article mysteriously disappeared when the Jews liberated it from the occupying Jordanians in 1967. That article just vanished. Why? Because now the Palestinians care about the land because it's in Jewish hands.
Yes, the PLO was not created to liberate any land. It was created to destroy Israel. It's not about giving a Palestinian Arab a state, which is, again, it's a ridiculous idea. You have all these diverse ethnicities from diverse places, and the only thing that they share in common is get rid of the Jews.
Right.
And you have, you know, Rashida Tlaib showing up in Congress wearing her quote-unquote Palestinian thobe. Excuse me, that is an Arab garment found all over the Muslim Arab world because it happens to be that certain colors, that's kind of like saying an Italian suit is colonialist if an American wears it.
Exactly.
But again,
when people show up wearing keffiyehs and they claim that that's a Palestinian or an Arab item of clothing as well, again, that in and of itself is colonizing. That's colonizing Jewish culture, as that was our headdress, our prayer scarf called a sudra, long before Islam was invented and long before the Arabs co-opted that particular article of clothing.
That's something I didn't know.
Yes, the Yasser Arafat's famous black and white keffiyeh, we had a sudra, which was often blue and white, hundreds of years before they had that. And yet we are called the colonizers.
It's cultural appropriation.
Exactly.
Let's be honest. All of Islam and all of Christianity are cultural appropriation.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. But God forbid you say that on a university campus now. You'll be lynched.
Well, it's an amazing thing that today, the majority of the world, at least at some theoretical level, bows to the Jewish God. And yet they all still hate the Jews.
Exactly.
There are 100 anti-Semites in the world for every Jew, according to the ADL survey.
Right.
100 times as many. I mean, because there's only 16 million Jews in the world today, and there are 160 million anti-Semites according to the stats.
Right. I think that is very low.
That's a very low ball figure. It is indeed. I mean, across much of the Middle East, and it does have to do with preaching lies. It has to do with, you know, people are being indoctrinated rather than educated. You have schools in the West Bank named after notorious mass murderers. It's not as if, you know, you don't your heroes do teach you something. If you go to a school that is named after a mass murderer, you are learning that mass murder is a good thing.
So yes.
You have Dalal Mughrabi schools, and she was responsible for the Coastal Road Massacre. I mean, she had 38 people, 13 kids. This mass murderer is being honored all over the West Bank. And you know where else she's being honored? At events thrown by Students for Justice in Palestine.
Exactly. And all the
It is one of the most perplexing things about this whole nonsense is that people don't recognize straight up that Students for Justice in Palestine is a Jew hate group. That's the entire purpose of the organization. And I can prove it very easily to anybody who's listening. I will pull this on you. Take out your phone right now, and as you're listening to me, go search for anybody honored by Students for Justice in Palestine. You know, they hold an event to honor so-and-so, and anything of that nature. You are looking at a picture of a mass murderer, a terrorist, or a so-called academic who blames the Jews for being killed.
Exactly.
That's the only people they honor. The only people they honor are the likes of Razmiya Odeh, who killed a pair of Hebrew University students. She was jailed, she was released, and then she came to America and lied on her citizenship application. So she was eventually expelled, but not before having events with 1,000 people held in her honor with Students for Justice in Palestine running that show. And then you have people like George, is it Haddad? The head of the PFLP?
Oh, yes.
Front for the Liberation of Palestinian, an arch terrorist. And that's who they are honoring. And actually, I did this at a particular university, and a student in the back held up his hand and offered me a name. And I, by the way, I was offering $100 to anybody who finds a person honored by Students for Justice in Palestine who doesn't fall into those three categories I just mentioned. And this kid raises his hand and says, I got a name here, and he throws out a name I had literally never heard before. And I said, oh, why? What's his story? Why is he being honored by Students for Justice in Palestine? Oh, well, he stabbed 8 people in Tel Aviv.
Ah, and there you go. Quite a hero.
A supporter of Students for Justice in Palestine is either a barbarian, a Jew-hating barbarian, or a complete ignoramus who has no idea what's going on. And they're just following like sheep.
Well, it's a terrorist supporting, terrorist sympathizing, terrorist loving group, just like most of the other anti-Israel groups are on all university campuses. In Canada here, we have the same problem. Last year, University of Toronto students, one of the Palestinian groups at U of T, invited Issam al-Yamani to come speak. And he was also part of the PFLP. He was a proud member of the PFLP terrorist organization. And they brought him to speak. And it's disgraceful. This is who they're bringing, you know? It's like saying we're going to invite Hitler or Goebbels to come speak. I mean, what society have we come to where we're honoring mass murderers?
It is completely acceptable because they hate Jews.
Exactly.
It's not even about support for terrorism. Nobody has sympathy for terrorists when Jews cannot somehow be involved or some sort of offense to Islam because the Muslims are so oppressed by the Jews whom they drove out of their homes throughout Arabia to have them find refuge in Israel. I mean, the whole idea of claiming that Israel is doing ethnic cleansing, the majority of Israel's Jews were ethnically cleansed from their homes across the Arab world. We know this. This is history.
The of course.
The entire history of the region is inverted. And by the way, I mean, I want to drive this point home. Terrorism, when Jews are not involved, everybody recognizes is evil. An act of terror against civilians as compared to, you know, obviously a partisan or terror activity against an occupying army or government, that's one thing. But an act against civilians, everybody understands that that's completely evil. An example of this, the Irish Republican Army, which was gaining a great deal of sympathy around the world. And then they took over the boat of Lord Lewis Mountbatten, murdered him, murdered his grandson, murdered his deckhand. At the time, Lord Mountbatten, though he was related to the royal family, he was a retired admiral. He was no longer part of the British military. So he was a civilian when the IRA killed him. And certainly his grandson and his deckhand, who were both teenagers, work civilians. That one incident nearly destroyed the Irish Republican Army. If you look at the history there, it almost destroyed the IRA because they engaged themselves in terror. And then there's an example. There is a region of the world which is unquestionably being occupied to this day, and nobody who doesn't study Eastern international affairs, the Russian and the region and that region of the world, nobody who's not a scholar has heard anything about the Chechen rebels since about 2005.
Oh yeah, of
remember
course.
Them? You know, I mean, you know why? You know why they took a page out of the Palestinian playbook, and they took over a children's primary school, and in the course of that fight, children were killed. And that was the end of the Chechen rebels, because nobody, but nobody, has any sympathy for a group of barbarians who murder civilian children unless those children are Jews.
Exactly.
That is why Israel is a totally different story, and Students for Justice in Palestine is proud to be a barbaric supporter of terror and hater of Jews. Under this, you know, new facade, it's all about that facade. Just remember that anti-Semitism was a facade, that they killed their God was a facade. It's every generation finding another excuse for blaming the Jews for being hated.
Again, and you're right, it is an excuse. That's the key word. It's an excuse, not a reason. Because as you say, does anyone care about any of the other one of a dozen actual countries being occupied illegally around the world nowadays? I mean, there is serious stuff going on. But no one cares. Does anyone care about China occupying Tibet? No. Why? Because there are no Jews there. The Jews aren't involved, so why should we care?
It's not just, you know, even to talk about occupation, when you don't allow a population self-determination and liberty, that is something that we all should be working to advance around the world. And yet these people don't care. They support totalitarian regimes. The totalitarians of Iran oppress their own people, the North Koreans and the Chinese, whom you mentioned. It's not just the Chinese occupying Tibet and dominating over the Tibetan people. They dominate over the Chinese people.
Exactly.
The loss of liberty around the world, and the biggest force for good in the world right now is the United States of America, and all they can do is demonize America and burn the American flag. And you know what? The people who love liberty around the world, they cannot figure it out.
Right.
The left, the progressive left, has decided that America is evil. Oh, yeah, really? Go find another country around the world where you think they're doing it better.
Exactly. And you know what? It's just, again, it's cognitive dissonance. They don't actually understand what the term evil truly means. Because you standing, playing on your iPhone with your Starbucks coffee in a free country where you can hold up whatever protest sign you want and nothing happens to you, yes, oh my God, it's so evil. This is such a fascist, you know, oppressive country, America. They have no idea what real evil looks like.
Well, actually, honestly, the best way for them to find evil is to look in the mirror, because what they're doing is so destructive to America and so encouraging. I mean, unfortunately, we're going to watch Biden and Harris, if they reopen the Palestinian embassy and they start funding the PLO again. You know what has not happened in the last 4 years? A major terror incident. There has not been not only did moving the embassy to Jerusalem not cause a conflagration across the Middle East, but the last 4 years have shown us that a form of peace is actually possible, where people recognize that terror is not rewarded, where Jew hatred is not rewarded. If things continue to go the way they now look, we could be going in a very dangerous direction. And quite honestly, those who supported this, the Jews who voted against Trump this time around, when those people, when that major terror incident occurs, I'm going to, I hate to say it, but I told you so.
Yeah,
I'm telling you now that if there's a major terror incident after the Palestinian consulate is reopened and the United States is handing money to the Palestinian Authority with which to reward terror, we are going to see more terror happen in the Middle East, and it will be the fault of those people who voted these idiots into office.
100%, 100%. And time will tell, but I agree with you that it's not going to be good. Of course, any time funding goes towards the Palestinian and the terror groups around them, it's no good for Israel, it's no good for Jews around the world. And it's our responsibility. We are often the bosses. You know, we're responsible for our own problems. As we say, we've got problems in the Jewish community. We are disconnected. There is no unity. We've got problems, and it's our responsibility to fix those in order for the next generation to do better.
Yeah, and we got to learn our lesson. And it's, you know, the Jews have to. It's not a matter of just wake up. They have to study. They have to study their history. They have to study Judaism. They have to recognize that this is not new, and it's always about hostility towards their values. If we want to, you know, close off with a more reinforcing and more positive message for the Jewish community, you know, recognize something. The values of a first world civilization and a free society all come from us.
Mm-hmm.
They
exactly.
All come from, you know, valuing life. The idea that every life is sacred and there's a brotherhood of man, and therefore peace is more valuable than warfare, and we should focus on universal justice, holding everyone, including the leaders, accountable, and universal education, and family, and social responsibility. None of these are new ideas. None of this is progressivism. All of this is ancient, and all of this is ours. And the barbarians who hate Jews also hate all of those values. mean, Hitler was very proud to be called a barbarian, and he said he wanted Germans to be capable of being imperious and ruthless and cruel. It was about a hostility towards values, and this is always why the Jews were hated. I will close with, there's a medrash that was shown to me by the head of the Amud Esh Holocaust Memorial Museum, Rabbi Sholem Friedman. You know, when God says to Moses, go fight against the Midianites and get the redemption of Israel from the Midianites, Moses then turns to the Jewish people and says, go do the redemption of God, go Nikom Nikmas Hashem, the Midian. It's not really revenge, but it's, you know, punish the Midianites on behalf of what they did to God. And the Medrash says, how can these two verses, which are right next to each other, contradict each other? And the answer is that Moses is told by God, you know, the Midianites made you sin, and therefore you have to go fight against them. And God, and Moses turns around and says, God, if we were not, if we were like them, if we served idols like them, they wouldn't be interested in us. It's because we follow your commandments. It's because we circumcise ourselves. It's because we believe that our lives have to follow you. That's why they hate us.
Mm-hmm.
When you want moral values, barbarians of the world are going to hate you. There's going to be barbarian pushback against values throughout history. And it's all, you know, this is what the actual connection is of intersectionality. They all hate values for one reason or another.
Right. Exactly.
And it's very sad that that is being allowed to gain currency, but that's what, you know, so-called progressivism, I keep pointing out, it's a tremendous regression. It's going back to ideas that are actually very old, very ancient. The reason why they are unfamiliar to us is because we were living under a domination of a church which actually preached those values. You
right.
know, though they get it from us, and they're very proud to say that they got it from us. I hope I'm not offending anybody by pointing out the obvious here. But those values are that which progressivism is designed to tear down and destroy.
Exactly. Exactly. And it is our responsibility to be the light unto the nations, to hold Judaism and its values dear, and to ensure that the next generation understands the weight and the import of the Torah, of Jewish values, of Israel, so that we don't, you know, end up as these valueless barbarians like the rest of the world.
It is, you know, that lie, the big lie about the Jews wanting domination and control and to take advantage of everybody else, it is designed to falsify the actual Jewish message. Whereas, you know, what were the Jews chosen to be? To be a nation of priests and a holy nation. A priest is not a bad person who wants to dominate over others. It's a person who wants to bring the message of God to others. That's the mission. That's what the Jews are supposed to do. To say that there is a better way to do things. And obviously, as we see today, those ideas are spreading around the world. They are winning, but the barbarians are going to push back against it, and it's our job to recognize that there's a difference here, that the values that we are pursuing, the values we are upholding, those are the holy values that people should be following, and all we're looking for here is to see the brotherhood of man actually recognized as the brotherhood that it is.
Right, absolutely.
So, well, on that note, it has been terrific speaking with you today, and you know, obviously, we certainly are both hoping to see the campus situation turn around, where it's once again safe to be a Zionist Jew on campus, and where hate groups are called out for the hate that they are spreading.
Absolutely, I agree. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to doing it again with you soon.
Great, Lauren Isaacs of Herud Canada. Thank you so much.
Thank you.